This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Hello, and welcome to Long Shots Golf Betting Podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Arnold Palmer Invitational Edition. I am Matt Brown, joined as always by Wes Reynolds and Kelly Bidlin. We will run through not only a course breakdown, all of the things that we put into our models this week, why we valued certain things, what our models spit out, and of course, everything that has made our betting card to date. As we get started here, guys, just a quick reminder, if you do want a VSiN Pro subscription for on the annual basis, we're going to save you $41 if you use the promo code GOLF, G-O-L-F. So go in VSiN.com/subscribe for GOLF, the promo code GOLF, G-O-L-F. And you know what? Listen, you're already listening to this, so you know you get Wes's stuff. You know you get all those. Let's talk about the NBA stuff you get over there. Or you might be getting some horse racing stuff from Mike Somich. You might be getting some of the hockey stuff out there. And sure, of course, college basketball stuff as well. So
MLB primer from Adam Burke.
Yeah, MLB stuff that's coming up. Yes, all of these
things. How do you
not
know everything that's on the website, Matt? You're terrible.
Out there. So come to VSiN Pro subscriber, VSiN.com/subscribe. GOLF, G-O-L-F is a promo code. Going to save you $41 on an annual subscription. So as we said, we're going to talk about the Arnold Palmer Invitational here in just a moment. Guys, a very, very quick recap of last week. If we had a sounder for a fart noise, that would be where I would go with that. That would be pretty much where everything was for me. Wes, I sent Kelly a deal where I put in one of those like middle of the night on Wednesday night outrights on Shane Lowry, which is way after we record this, obviously. And I go, you know, these are the kind that don't even count. So if it hits, it hits. What? No big deal. And then, of course, Shane Lowry doesn't come anywhere close to getting it done anyway, as this thing got extended to Monday. So loser for me this week. What about you?
Yeah, me too. I had a couple guys in the top 10 with Cam Young and Keith Mitchell, but, you know, didn't really do well. They weren't really right there at the end to win. Austin Eckrode, of course, had the, I guess, overnight lead on Sunday night as it went to Monday morning. He was odds on, and he closed it out. Didn't give in. Minwoo Lee made a little bit of a run, but never really could quite get there. And Austin Eckrode holds on, gets his first PGA Tour win. I think he's about 110-1, kind of market average or at least market consensus. So yet another first-time winner. I think we've had four already in 2024. You know, barely half the events, and they've all been first-time winners. So back-to-back, actually, with Knapp the week before in Mexico, and then Austin Eckrode, who does get into this week's field at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. I would have worn my red cardigan, but I don't have a red cardigan. But that's what is presented to the winner this week at the API.
Kelly, quick recap on your end. How did things turn out?
Well, thanks, Doug Gim, I guess, for getting inside the top 20. But yeah, other than that, it was just gross all around. It was, hey, for anybody who's betting golf week to week, it was one of those tournaments that I think if you see going south, it's pretty easy to move on pretty quickly from, because it's tough enough to pick an outright winner at a golf tournament. But we always talk about it. It's got, you know, 100 something guys going in it. And then you go to PGA National, which is a tough course. And then you get some weather on top of it. And it's tough sometimes to go out there and pick a winner. I was feeling for you on Lowry. I knew you had that ticket, and that was just them having to stop and start again and all that. It was just those are the type of situations where it's the. Yeah, don't overly celebrate if you get a win, and if you lost on that, it sucks, and move on.
You know who we should feel sorry for, Wes? As we were paying attention to that tournament, Erik van Rooyen is who we should feel sorry for.
Yeah.
Because he was in the middle of an epic round of golf when the weather set in, and like, look, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, these guys are pro athletes. They should be able to power through that and whatever else. I was like, listen. If you are rocking and rolling, you're in the groove. If you've ever played golf, you know, one bad swing can just set a round off. And just like, if you're feeling it, you're feeling it. And dude was just destroying the course and ends up having to pause after 10 holes and then just never really got back on track after the weather delay. But man, that was like that. We were in for something special. Goes out in 28 was really on pace to do something special, but again, the weather didn't play along.
Yeah, he actually left. I don't even believe he was hanging around on Monday at PGA National, because they have that little pro-am that they have up at Seminole and Jupiter, just right up the road there. And he was playing in that. So I think he knew that his fate was sealed. And even though he got to be the leader in the clubhouse, that he wasn't going to have a chance at victory. But course played a little bit easier just because, of the weather, I think. So it was a little bit softer than normal. But 17 under par gets it done for Austin Eckroat.
On to the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill in Orlando, Florida. Fellas, we are back to a signature event. So for you one and done players out there, just remember, $20 million prize pool here and only 69 players. So this is where you use one of your big guns. Go in and be sure and take advantage of this in your one and done pools out there. Top 50 in ties and everybody within 10. So as we said, the last time this happened, in theory, everyone could make it through. In reality, probably somewhere 8 to 12 guys end up getting cut somewhere along the way in all of this. But Wes, let's talk a little bit about Bay Hill.
Yeah, and a really good field, obviously, here. Everybody that is technically eligible except for Tony Finau, he elected to go ahead and skip this week, is here this week. So Bay Hill Club in Orlando, Florida. It's been hosting this event for a year. This is Arnold Palmer's tournament. His daughter and his son-in-law still own and operate Bay Hill Club, where Arnold had property and where he passed away. But really good field here this week. 69 players for this signature event, as you mentioned. So top 50 from the FedEx Cup, then the Aon Next 10, Swing 5, current year tourney winners. There's a couple sponsor exemptions, and then the Arnold Palmer Cup Award winner, which I believe is to an amateur player. So 54 of the top 55 that are actually eligible are here at Bay Hill this week. A little breakdown of the course. Designed in 1961, Arnold Palmer owned it and then redesigned it, did several redesigns, most recently in 2016. Par 72, a little less than 7,500 yards, 7,466 to be exact. Tough set of par fours. Three of the par fives measure over 550. The par threes are actually where I think the most difficult holes are here, because they average about 220 yards. So almost all the par threes are over 200 yards. Really tests all facets of your game. You got pretty thick rough, that overseeded rye, Bermuda greens that'll run very fast. They might get up to 14 on the stimp on Sunday, but even though they're very big greens, but heavily bunkered, 84 waters in play on nine holes. So you do have a lot of hazards here. So you can get in trouble here, especially if the wind blows. And we've seen, you know, a couple years ago and with Scheffler and Tyrrell Hatton, where you have just a few under par that win this thing. So this is a pretty tough course. Has been rated in the top 10 of the toughest course, I think, in 6 of the last 7 years. Fairways firm and fast, I think, probably is what we're looking at. I mentioned the par three, so you got to score well on the par fives too, and then a tough stretch at the 17th with that long par three, and then the 18th, kind of a nervy tee shot where you got it over water. So when I looked at Bay Hill kind of correlated courses, I think you look at a little PGA National, a little Quail Hollow, Olympia Fields, maybe some Augusta, Wingfoot, Oak Hill, Bethpage, kind of the classic courses that we have seen in majors over the years.
Kelly, you know, if you look at this course history, this tournament has trended to playing harder over the last few years. You can look back and there's been winners here at, you know, 1800, 1700, stuff like that, but the way that they've done this course, they've tried to trend this a little bit to being a little bit tougher on these dudes. Hopefully they keep it up this week with all of that, because that's one of the things I'm really looking forward to. And honestly, that's how I handicap this tournament. So hopefully they're doing that. Hopefully this isn't going to be one of those tournaments where they can go out and just absolutely destroy the course again. So I'm banking on it kind of keeping with the trend of playing a little bit tougher over the last few years.
Yeah, I think that's what we're going to see here as well. You know, we've got some tough rough to play out of. Fairways are pretty tight. Not a lot of room there. Like Wes talked about, you got some water here, so it's not really easy necessarily off the tee, on approach. One of the toughest courses that you're going to see on approach. all year. And I will probably say this three times through the podcast, but check the weather, especially in Florida. It looks like right now, it looks like the first couple days should be pretty nice, but the weekend looks like an absolute nightmare. So keep an eye on that, especially if you're getting involved, in game or anything like that. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this one plays out. Always a great watch every year, this tournament. I love these tougher courses. It feels like everything's getting leaning a little easier these days. And even, even watching PGA National play as easy as it did through some of the weather conditions was a little disheartening. So hopefully we get back to Bay Hill and watch, really major level competition here with a really good field.
If we look at the odds board, guys, Scottie Scheffler, 7-1, Rory McIlroy, 9-1. Pretty big jump down to Xander Schauffele and Victor Hovland coming in at 16-1. These are prices over at DraftKings as of this recording. 18-1 on Patrick Cantlay, as is Ludvig Åberg. We have 22 on Spieth and Morikawa, 25 on Fleetwood, Burns, Young, Homa, and JT coming in at 28-1. Will Zalatoris, Matt Fitzpatrick, Jason Day at 30, and everybody else 40-1 or longer. As we mentioned, Wes, only 69 players in this field. And so when you see a 7-1 on Scottie Scheffler, you got to understand that maybe some of these numbers attached to these guys are going to look a little bit shorter than you're used to, specifically once we get down the board. Because again, there's only 69 guys. And again, so long as you don't fall way, way off pace and way, way off the lead, everybody's going to get four goes at this course as well. So, listen, as you're perusing the odds board, just understand how this thing is all set up.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to get away. Look, Kitayama won by one last year. I think there were like five or six guys tied for second, including Rory. It seemed like it was a really condensed leaderboard, so it was really hard to get away here. 9-under was the winning score last year, 5-under the year before. Bryson had 11-under in 2021, and Tyrrell Hatton, that was some of the worst wins I've seen at Bay Hill. He won at 4-under. So, yeah, it's going to be hard to really get some separation from the field here, so I would expect a tight leaderboard again on Sunday.
And Kelly, as we get to our bets, one of the other things I think that we should also kind of preface people, you're not going to be getting the same price on your top 10 markets, your top 20 markets, your top 30. By the way, DraftKings put up top 30 and top 40 markets for a 69-person tournament, just so you know.
Yeah.
So those are available out there for everybody. But just, as you look down, you just have to understand what you're getting. And if you don't feel comfortable with it, then you don't have to put as much outlay into this tournament as you normally would. But just understand, you're not going to be getting the same payoff as you get for a lot of these tournaments that we talk about.
Yeah, you're not. I still found the odds to be pretty attractive in those markets. Yeah. And I think when we talk about a tournament that there's going to be lower scoring, the chances of getting into the inside that top 20 or something like that, not as low a score as I meant, a little bit tougher scoring, you to get inside that top 20 in a smaller field, you might, a little bit better possibility, a little easier to do if you get hot on a Sunday or something like that. You do have a cut here, but like we talked about, it's only going to be a few people cut. So even if you got a guy who's not looking like he's in a good position on Friday, could easily work himself back into that top 20, top 10 range. So from a betting standpoint, I really gravitated more towards those this week than, I mean, we talk about it every week, how important those are, but really, really found myself pouring more money into those this week than the outright market, because I really do think there's some opportunity there. And yeah, like you said, this is I think we're seeing new setups for tournaments. I think we're also watching in real time books trying to figure out how to handle that as well, right? Mm-hmm. There's not everybody that's going to go out there and hang top 30s and 40s. Comparatively, I thought there was a lot of attractive prices at top 20s when I was looking at MGM, I'll bring up, for example, top 30s. I thought they were really gross for only 10 spots lower, but you got to take in all the accounting of how many guys are playing in the tournament and adjust the odds accordingly. So make sure you're running the math and you feel like you're making a sound mathematical bet.
For me, guys, and we're going to talk here about what we put into our models this week. Very interesting week for me and a very tough week for me to decipher, because I'm back to running models at three different sites. And again, we're in full transparency. I've talked about Rick Gaiman's site over at Rick Run Good. We've talked about the guys over at Bet Spurts, which I've been using as well. A new site out there called Bet the Number Golf that I've been testing out as far as running their model. and seeing what they have going. I'm not a coder. I just put in what I find valuable and weight it accordingly, and then their algorithm spits out the stuff. Usually, I'm getting pretty synonymous results. Like, yeah, there's some differing stuff here and there, and I kind of pick things out. These three models this week were all over the place. Like, I had to really decipher how I was going to go about making this card. So there was not a lot of agreement in the three different algorithms out there, which made it tough on me. So it'll be interesting. Kelly, as we start talking about this, yeah. What did you plug in this week, and what did you find important, and what did you not find important?
Right? Yeah, it's kind of interesting you say that, because I had similar results, I feel like, yeah, on some of my models, what they were spitting out. So I think, you know, off the tee, this is one of those courses in one of those tournaments that's really a true test everywhere. But off the tee, you know, talked about a little bit, but it's going to be important here. You got to, distance helps. If you got shorter approach shots, that's great going into these greens. Like you talked about, Wes, it can really run fast sometimes. We know they're sloped and big too, and that stuff likes to run off them. So the closer you can put it to the pin, the better. Off the tee though, you got to be careful of the tight fairways. You do have some penal rough. You do have some water on some holes. Wes brought it up. Those par threes are extremely important. I rarely ever factor kind of, you know, strokes gained par threes into models. Did on this tournament though. But yeah, the off the tee stuff, and then, you know, approach super important here. We're talking about, over 30% of approach shots coming from over 200 yards. So really those guys, feel like I say it often, but if you're not looking for someone that's got distance off the tee, you really need someone that can stripe those long irons well. And in an ideal world, both is what you're looking at this week. You got to score on the par fives, right? Par 72, you got four par fives in here this week. They are the scorable holes. You got to score there, because the par threes and par fours are going to be tough enough. And then the... Yeah, you know, a little bit of three putt avoidance with how big the greens are, and then, you know, a little bit around the green, a little bit of scrambling for me, but not too much in those categories. We have seen what the around the green play here change a little bit the past couple of years. We had those kind of shaved off runoff areas that there's some rough in now as well. So some of these players still learning how to navigate, I think, that a little bit. But that was mainly it. I mean, this is a big, big time off the tee and approach game tournament for me.
Wes, as you were putting your models together, was there anything that you found as kind of a disqualifier? Was there a stat that you put in that if somebody was really, really down as far as the field goes, again, only 69 players, let's say you're looking, you're like, oh man, this guy's 62nd in this field in this particular category. Did you have any disqualifiers, or were you okay with somebody maybe struggling in a particular area as long as they were okay in the others?
Yeah, I was a little bit okay. Nothing really much of a disqualifier here. It's just kind of like, when you're looking at the same thing, which thing do you use to go ahead and measure that? Like what I did, obviously approach, third toughest course to gain strokes on approach. So I did use the basic usual approach stuff, but also use proximity gain 200 plus yards because you are going to have some long iron shots in here. You're not going to have a lot of wedge shots. So I guess if there's something you don't want to necessarily look at, this isn't like a wedge fest here at this event. So you're not going to be wanting to look at the 75 to 100 or 100 to 125, because that could be a little bit deceiving. So I went a little bit with the longer irons. In terms of driving, you could use strokes gained off the tee. I certainly wouldn't argue against that. I used total driving though, which total driving, by the way, for those that don't know, driving distance rank plus driving accuracy rank. And I took that actually, you know, based on the 2024 season, so a very smaller sample size. Strokes gained par five, because the birdie or better on the par fives are about 38% here, so you got to take advantage. Scrambling gain, not huge, and one of the reasons why is because they grew out the rough around these greens a few years ago. So they used to have these like tight Bermuda lies that you had to chip off of, which made it a lot more difficult. And now they have thick rough around these greens, so you're just basically having to chunk it out of there, which, you know, works very well for somebody like a Victor Hovland that's not a great chipper. I know Rory had some comments where he's like, yeah, I kind of wish it was like the old way, but they went ahead and changed that. Bogey avoidance, as Kelly mentioned, this is the course that has the most penalty strokes on the PGA Tour over the last 3 years, so you got bogeys and doubles and worse that lurk everywhere, largely because of the water hazards. Small on birdie or better, just because it's tougher to make birdies here. The birdie or better percentage is lower, certainly, than the tour average. So use that as well. In terms of strokes gained putting on fast Bermuda greens, because these are really fast greens. So look, these guys have been on Poer, they've been on Paspalum. So mm-hmm. guys struggle on different surfaces, and some guys like getting back to this fast Bermuda. Strokes gained par four, 450 to 500 yards. I think half of the par fours here are of that variety. So, you know, that those are going to be hard. The strokes gained par three, 200 to 225. Then I did a little bit of course history. Now, with course history, you got to keep in mind some guys have played, if you're modeling like by 24 rounds or 36 rounds or something like that, they've played those full allotment of rounds. And then you have some guy like Kitayama, who wins last year on debut. He's only played four rounds. Jordan Spieth's only played eight rounds, whereas Rory has played 36. Adam Scott's played 36. So I went with stroke average. I went with like average strokes instead of the total strokes gain, because when you go to a total strokes gain, you get a little bit of bias in terms of guys who have obviously played more rounds. So that's kind of what I've been doing a little bit more, is doing the average strokes gain per round when I go like approach or off the tee or around the green, something like that.
There's one other thing you brought up there at the beginning, Wes, I want to seize on. I'm glad you brought it up. This is the time for anybody else that, you know, that's at home running kind of numbers like we are, running models like we are. This is the time where I felt like this tournament specifically was focusing down that time frame of rounds that I was looking at. Now that we're into the season, you can kind of look more closely at, hey, what have guys really done the past, you know, past few tournaments that they've played in, and that doesn't stretch all the way back to August. Now it feels like that time where I'm more dialing in into shorter time frames with everything that we're looking at. So I'm glad you brought that up, Wes, because that's definitely something I was doing a little bit differently this week, it felt like, from past weeks.
Yeah, because now we have like at least some form here, because at the beginning of the year, that's where you have to go like 50 rounds. Because guys hadn't played since August or September, but now you can go the 24s and the 36, which I think are the pretty standard time frames in terms of doing this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, the only thing I think that might be a little different in mine than a lot of people, I didn't really do anything around the green. Like, I kind of did the little 2% on scrambling that I typically would do for like a putting deal for as a tiebreaker more than anything else. But it's weird because you look, and despite the fact that these greens are hard to hit and all stuff like that, like the around the green stuff is like tour average, you know. It's like, it's not harder here than it is everywhere else. And there is at least a little bit of a hypothesis that it's because they've grown the rough up so much to where you can at least not be chipping off of tight lies, which if anyone that's ever played golf knows how intimidating chipping off of a tight lie can be. And if you have a little fluff underneath, it makes at least a little bit better for you. So there is that. And so like typically when we look at greens that are hard to hit and hard to hold, like we like to look at around the green and scrambling, and I actually didn't do that this week because it really hasn't been a thing that has led to a ton of success here for, you know, people that have done really well. And so if you kind of look like strokes gained around the green, you know, Harris English was T2 last year. He lost. Tyrrell Hatton was T4 last year. He lost. If you look like the winners and guys in the top five over the last, I mean, the only guy that really tore it up around the green, shocker, of the last 3 years is Jordan Spieth. And that's what he does. That's just what Jordan Spieth does. But like everybody else is either like average to the field or actually has even lost like to the field around the green. And so for me, I actually didn't weigh that very much at all. Like I said, just put it in as more of a tiebreaker.
Yeah, it's basically the same thing here, Matt. I think that there is I think those changes too that you we talked about, Wes, is that's definitely part of it. And I think some of these guys are still figuring that out, and it's helping others, you know, others right now. You're absolutely, Matt. I think, you know, hitting off those thin runoffs. I don't know about you. I mean, I don't often play golf for a lot of money like these guys. So for me, sometimes those sail about 100 yards. You know, you catch that clean with nothing underneath it. Oof.
Hey, listen, I'm playing big money rounds of golf all the time, Kelly. Yeah, I mean, you know, let me tell you,
those are those chips that you need a bowling it on sometimes.
Hey, listen, it trust me, if it is like intimidating and there's any money on the line whatsoever, you better believe that Texas wedge is coming out. I'll put that bitch from 30 yards away if that's I right. have to. Like, that's, you know, right. Like, it's no way I'm blading it off that little.
I'd be like, I need another ball. Ball chipped it over the green.
Like, hand me the 7-wood and I'll just putt the 7-wood, you know, from way away. All right, guys, as always, we will tell you what these models spit out and what made it onto our cards this week, but we're going to take a quick break. And when we do come back, of course, we're going to head around the world with Russ Reynolds. Welcome back to Long Shots, golf betting podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Matt, Wes, and Kelly. Guys, a reminder, VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code golf. We're going to give you $41 off. Yeah, you get all the golf stuff that we do, but really, if you're already paying attention to this, what you should be paying attention to is the other stuff we do. So how about the college basketball stuff? How about the baseball stuff? We're heading into baseball season. Of course, we're doing UFC breakdowns over there. We're doing everything over on VSiN.com, so be sure and take advantage of that. You can get in for $41 off of a yearly subscription. VSiN.com/subscribe using the promo code golf. All right, Wes, this is that time that everybody tunes in for. Literally, we get more stuff about this than anything else because we got to head around the world with Wes Reynolds.
Yeah, and get our frequent flyer miles because we're on three different continents this week. So I'll start the furthest away. I'll start in Asia for Hong Kong Live Edition over there at the Hong Kong Golf Club. By the way, this is played the Hong Kong Open. It used to be a sanctioned event with the DP World Tour. Now there's a separate event on the Asian Tour. Joaquin Niemann wins in Jeddah. So now he's won two of the first three on the Live Tour. I actually did place a bet, by the way, on him. I got a text on Sunday morning. It's like, yeah, he won overnight and lived. There's still 50-1 out there. So just took a number basically on Joaquin Niemann. So I do have him in the Masters portfolio. He's the second choice behind Rahm this week, but went with three. I usually don't go very deep, obviously a very small field in live. This is only a par 70 of 67-10. So this is kind of like, you know, more of a plotter, I guess, type course. Guys are good with irons, but we've seen bombers win the Hong Kong Open, like Scott Hinn, Rory McIlroy. So I did go with the bomber at first. I went with Bryson DeChambeau, 14-1. Ninth in Las Vegas, was fourth last week in Jeddah. Looks like he's got a little bit more consistency in his game, certainly, than he had last year. So I played him at 14-1. Adrian Meronk, 22. He's got two top tens his last two live events, ninth in Vegas, sixth in Jeddah. And then a guy that actually does have a lot of experience on this course, despite the fact he's not like a regular Asian Tour player, and that's Patrick Reed, who I played at 50-1. He's got a lot of experience here. He's played four times the last 9 years, finished third here on debut. So he has not been really playing well. But one thing I've noticed about these live events, it is tough to like look at guys on form, because you'll get guys come out of nowhere and it's like all of a sudden they're contending an event when they've been like 38th or 33rd or something like that in a 54 player field. And then all of a sudden they show up. So course form's a little tough just because the schedule is so erratic. So that is it for Hong Kong. Now we go to South Africa for the second event of 2 weeks on the DP World Tour / Sunshine Tour.
70 tournaments in South Africa. It's amazing.
I know. Yeah. I know. They do have a lot there. And by the way, speaking of a long shot there, we had a 300-1 hit in South Africa last week. I didn't have it, but the golf world had it. Jordan Gumberg, he is actually an American. He wins in a playoff over Robin Williams, who's a South African player, had a two-shot lead, two holes to play, double bogey 17, and then loses in the playoffs. So he now moves up Gumberg from like 669 to like 270 or something. But same event. It's the Johnson Workwear Open in Edenvale, South Africa. And this course has been featured on the DP World Tour before. It was on the Challenge Tour, the Sunshine Tour. It's called Glendower. It is 75-42 for a par 72, but it sits above sea level, so it actually plays closer to like 7,000 yards. So this is not the brute of a course that it would look when you see that yardage. So I went with a few here. Andy Sullivan, 40-1, actually won his first DP World Tour sanctioned event on this course back in 2015, the South African Open Championship. Fourth last week at the SDC, best finish in 18 months. Jaden Scaper, 55-1, only 20 years old, got some real potential here. He was sixth on the course in 2020, four top tens he finished with 2023, so he's not that removed from form. Jacques Krusiewicz, we're going to go with that, as that's the the pronunciation. 60-1, regained his playing privileges. He was 11th at the Q School last winter. He's made every cut so far this year. He was fourth to end 2023 at the Joburg Open, fourth on this course in 2018. Thomas Aiken, another South African, 60-1. He's led the field in driving accuracy in three of his last eight starts. Top 10 in four of his last eight events for greens and regulation, pair of top fives on this course. And then another young guy that's a 20-something from South Africa, Casey Jarvis at 70-1, won on this course in 2021 for what was called the African Amateur Stroke Play Championship, 12th last week at the SDC. And then of an obscure American theme, like we talked about with Jordan Gumberg, let's go with James Nicholas at 125-1. Q School graduate of the DP World Tour last winter. By the way, he was a former football player and golfer at Yale. He's a kid born in New York City. So, you know, kind of an interesting story, an interesting route to get to the world of professional golf on a big tour. He's made every cut so far this year in 2024. So
New York James, City.
Yes.
Anybody yeah. remembers the Pace Picante sauce like commercials yes. from back in the yes. day? Like, yeah,
125-1 on James Nicholas. And I got one more. I forgot, man. I'm jet lagged. Sorry. I forgot that there was another tournament, four of them this week. There is another.
You read on four of them at Visa.com?
Yes. There is another PGA Tour event this week. By the way, the full field event is the alternate event down in Puerto Rico. The Puerto Rico Open is this week. Winner doesn't get a Masters invite, but does get the two-year PGA exemption and then PGA Championship. So this is played at Grand Reserve. Tom Kite designed this thing, par 72, 7506. Very wide fairway, so you really can't get in trouble, even though there are some lakes and bunkers on this course. But the wind is the primary defense. It's Paspalum again, slow on the stint meter, so pretty smooth, easy greens to putt on. Nico Echevarria, the defending champion, was 125-1 last year. So I went with a couple here. Robert McIntyre, 33-1. T6 a couple weeks ago in Mexico. Struck the ball real well last week at PGA National, but just horror show on the greens. But I think he's better on the Paspalum. Sixth and cut earlier this year at the Masters, on these greens, and also sixth at the Mexico Open. Ben Silverman, 40-1, 16th last week at the Cognizant, but fifth for strokes gained tee to green. Also led the field at strokes gained putting on this Paspalum a couple weeks ago in Mexico, where he finished T13. Cameron Champ, when I think of like a long, wide course where guys can really bomb it and just grip it and rip it, Cameron Champ certainly fits. 45-1, two career top tens at the Mexico Open on the Paspalum. I think he could go well here. Harrison Endicott, 80-1. He was the champion of the PGA Tour school last winter. Doesn't get in the fields though, because there's that priority list, so he's not in every field, and plus there's signature events. So this is a guy I had to go over to DP World Tour, which these guys have that option, and made cuts in Bahrain and Qatar, missed the cut in Mexico, but he's Australian, plenty of experience on this surface. And then a couple bombs here. Kevin Doherty at 90-1, also a bomber, fourth in strokes gained off the tee in Mexico a couple weeks ago. He is just super long, the guy that played primarily on the Corn Ferry last year. And then Rico Hoey, 110-1, missed five straight cuts, but did make the cut at PGA National. When I looked at some of the stats, I was like, he's top 10 on approach and top gain 10 for strokes gained off the tee per round over the last 16 rounds. Now, the Puerto Rico Open, by the way, I did not model, just in the essence of time. So I kind of just looked at some numbers at glance, and this is something you have to really take a chance on, because this is a really kind of weird field. You know, you've got some guys like Rasmus Højgaard and Daniel Berger here, and then you had some withdrawals. You got guys that are on that alternate list that maybe only play a couple events on the PGA Tour a year, because those are the only fields they can get in. So that is the Puerto Rico Open.
Kelly, fun fact for you. I went to moreofafrica.com. South Africa is home to 450 of Africa's golf courses, and some of the world's best golfers call it home. It is an incredible place to play on world-class courses under sunny skies, surrounded by incredible views and occasionally wildlife.
450 out of how many?
I don't know, but it's like, I mean, like,
you knew that was the obvious.
You should work for the Tourism Bureau, man.
Why did they write it like that? They got to clean up that language. Either you got to include how many courses are in Africa in total, or you just got to clean that up a little bit.
I mean, listen, here's the thing.
Here's a lot of golf courses, though. I've heard some pretty good golfers come from there.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that some of the countries that are underdeveloped probably don't have any golf courses.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say, too.
You know, so I'm guessing it's a good portion of the golf courses that are
I bet you're right
in Africa. But yes, so apparently 450 of them in South Africa alone. Again, that is what I read on the internet. don't tweet at me if you live in South Africa and you tell me that there's not 450 golf courses. I'm just, that's what the Google machine
says.
That's what
the Google says. Yeah. Matt, did you do anything with Puerto Rico?
I did not. That said, I was going to look at it a little bit later tonight. I probably will throw in, look, considering what that tournament's likely to be, I'll probably just throw in like 50 to one or longer guys, you know, just guys that I think have a chance if they play in their, you know, 90th percentile. And if they don't, they'll get cut essentially.
Yeah. This is one I feel like this is one of the alternate events that I usually actually play every year. It's one of the few I actually do play, but usually at this point in the golf season, I feel like I've been doing a little better and you're a little bit more confident in what you're doing betting wise. So I think I'm going to lay off this one this week, but if I do end up doing anything, VSiN.com will have all of our plays and I might just end up tailing a couple of Wes's.
Just a reminder here, guys, the API, it is a signature event. It is $20 million prize pool. If you're playing one and duns, use a big gun. This would be the time to do it. It's a long course. There's penal rough. There's hard, fast Bermuda greens here. There's water on half the holes. There's 84 bunkers. It is likely if they make this course tough, the scoring could be pretty low. And the guys that are, I say low, high. It's like, you never know how to like phrase that. You never know how to phrase that, right?
I mean,
it's like, you never know really how to phrase it. They are not going to tear up this course if they do it right. And so it should separate, you know, the absolute elite guys from some of these other ones. So again, if you're playing one and done, I think that that's kind of the way my approach is going to be this week. Full disclosure, I'll probably play Scotty. Like, I mean, like when it all comes down to it, like, I mean, it's a big first place prize and, you know, it fits him as well as anyone. So we might as well. Without further ado here, Kelly, what did your model spit out? And then what did you end up landing on as far as your betting card?
Yeah, it's kind of funny really quick. Just the one and done, because I have not decided yet. I have no idea how I'm going to decide. And there's a good chance that I end up playing Scotty too for that exact reason. Basically, I can't make a good decision. This is one of the bigger ones you're going to get every year. I might just use them here. Let's see. Everything that I ended up betting. Outrights. 3 on the outright card so far. I'm hoping one of my fine co-hosts talks me into another one that I'm liking. Xander Schauffele is actually where I started. Anybody who listens to this podcast has probably heard me bet Xander Schauffele a ton of times. Not a guy who's had a ton of success on this course, but man, he's just in great form right now. T4 at the Genesis, T9 at the Farmers, T3 at the Amex, T10 at Century. I think when you talk about liking that long iron play, he's a perfect fit for that. Was T39 last year here, T24 in 2020. Just not a guy who's come out here a ton and played this course over the years. Now that we see these signature events going on, obviously we're going to get the best of the golf world every single year out here. So these guys that you haven't seen as often will be teeing it up every single year. Did play an outright on him and played a top 10 on Xander Schauffele as well. He checked a lot of the boxes for me this week. Next down, Cameron Young, outright on him and a top 20 on him as well. I know you guys have been betting him a little bit more than I have recently, but I'm finally on board. Recent results, T3 at the Cognizant, T16 at the Genesis, T8 at Phoenix, 3rd in Dubai earlier this year. Did finish T10 here last year, T13, 22. So some of that good course history that we are looking for, Cameron Young has had here before. I think his game's really coming into form right now. The driver's really never gone away. The rest of it's all kind of rounding into shape, though, right now. Playing really well. Good off the tee. Good with the long irons. Something I'm looking for this week. So did play an outright on him. Did play a top 20 on him. And then I guess the one guy, it feels like I haven't bet in a while, but I have bet him many, many times in my life. It'd be Corey Connors. Welcome back to Kelly Bidlin's betting card this week. Did play an outright on him at 60-1, so I guess he's kind of my long shot this week, and then a top 20 on him as well. Up and down season, he was kind of the big model play for me this week. Was surprised at how high he was spiking across different models for me. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, T49 last week, T24 the Genesis, T28 at Phoenix. It's been okay, not a ton to get super excited about, so was a little surprised at seeing where he popped up in the models. Has played well here, though. T21, T11, 3rd his last 3 years at this tournament, so like that a lot. Ended up playing, again, a long outright on him and then a top 20 Let's see, top 20 then, another ad for me, Adam Scott. I played him, went back to him, Wes, this week. I feel like you and I have been taking turns betting him every single tournament this year in some way or another. Just went top 20, no outright or anything on him. Just, you know, he's having a great season. T19 Genesis, T8 over Phoenix, T20 at Pebble, T7 at Dubai Desert Classic. Tournament history, another guy hasn't played here a whole lot. He's got some, you know, mixed results over the years. Another guy has spiked in the models. He's been kind of doing that all year as he continues to play some pretty steady golf. So played a top 20 on him at about plus 140. They have 140 on him. And that is pretty much where my card stopped. Oh, no. I did play. I ended up laying like minus 130 on a top 10 on Scottie Scheffler. Scheffler is busting out a new putter this week. All of that.
He went back to his old putter.
But yeah, he's going back to that, changing things up. It just doesn't matter, man. It doesn't matter with what he's doing with the rest of his game right now. It's consistent. It's good enough to keep finish inside the top 10 in these tournaments. So this might become a common theme for me, but I laid minus 130 with him for a top 10. I think anything around that range is a fair price on him top 10 this week.
Wes, what did your model spit out? What'd you end up throwing on the card?
Yeah, four outrights this week. The longer shot I considered Van Roy and also Keegan Bradley. Did not end up being on him. I will have those guys, though, for like top 20s. So I'll have the placement markets up on Wednesday at VSiN.com.
I don't know if that counts as Wes talking me into Keegan or not. I'm going to say no. I'm going to stay away for now.
But look, he's been top 10 here, I think, yeah. Two of the last 3 years. So I think he's never missed a cut here. Or he's made just about every single cut. I'd have to look at my form sheet again. But, yeah, he's traditionally a cut maker here, so I think he's a very good top 20 bet. In terms of an outright, I didn't go too far down the board. I went down to the second spot. I went with Rory McIlroy at 9-1 here. Disappointing at PGA National, obviously, but the strokes gained off the tee, led the field, as he usually does. He leads the field, by the way, in total driving by a wide margin. Total driving, driving distance plus driving accuracy. We know he can bomb it, but he's pretty damn accurate off the tee. I think his combined rank, when you combine the two ranks of total driving, I believe was 16. So that is astonishingly low, by the way. So I think he's like, or 18 rather. So I think he's like third or fourth in distance and 14th in accuracy. And the next guy, at least that was in his field, when you add the driving distance and driving accuracy rank, the next guy in this field is Sami Valamaki, the man from Finland who contended in Mexico a couple weeks ago, 99. So that's a big difference between 18 and 99 when you add those two rankings. So Rory McIlroy, I just think he's really driving the golf ball well. He's won here before back in 2018. I usually don't like to take him this short here, but has never finished worse than 13th in seven appearances, was one of the runner-ups here last season. So he plays well on this course, and he's definitely a horse for course. So, like, if you're using a big gun and you're not using him maybe in a major, and obviously he had one since 2014, this could be a one-and-done for McIlroy. So Rory, 9-1. And then his fellow European, Victor Hovland, at 18-1. Should have won here. I was on him 2 years ago when he had that four-shot lead headed into the back nine on Saturday and then just couldn't get it home. But he's always a fit on a course where it's long and it's firm and it's fast. Thicker rough obviously helps him from a chipping standpoint, especially around the green. We know what a notoriously awful chipper Victor Hovland has been over the years, even though he has gotten better. But he's gained 9 strokes putting, too, by the way, over the last 2 years combined here. And, you know, like we were saying, the thick rough helps him. So Victor, in the model, he didn't really pop off because he doesn't have a lot of really good recent form. But he shows up at these type of courses like at Memorial, at Muirfield or Bay Hill. He's really good on these type of designs. So Victor at 18-1. Cameron Young, I missed a really good price. He got widely tipped this week. I was on him last week. 13th and 10th, 2 appearances here at Bay Hill. T4 at PGA National, of course. And then he birdied the last two on Monday. Birdied 17, that last par 3 of the Bear Trap, and then the par 5, 18. So maybe a little momentum for Cameron Young here this week at 28-1. And then Will Zalatoris, 33-1. He's been off for a few weeks. Last we saw him, he was a finishing runner-up for us at Riviera. But I think the injury concerns are gone with Will Zalatoris. Mm-hmm. He looks good. He looks fit. really probably could have won Riviera if Matsuyama doesn't shoot that amazing round on Sunday, and really should have. So Will Z 33-1. So those are my outrights. I didn't really go deep down the board this week, but I will have some top 20s and the like tomorrow afternoon.
So for me, guys, I really, really considered just going all in on Scotty. Like I honestly thought about not playing any other outrights other than Scotty, putting all of the money that I would typically put into the outright market all on Scotty Scheffler and just moving on. The only thing the models agreed on was Scotty Scheffler at number one across the board. The only thing that the models agreed on, right? Like everything else was all over the place, and I'm trying to decipher what it showed. The only thing that all of them agreed on was Scotty Scheffler, number one across the board. Like, and so.
And for those of you out there asking how often this happens to us, basically every freaking week. Okay. Yeah. It's number one across the board. Every freaking week.
And like in a field of only 69 golfers, in which if this course plays hard, every single thing that we've said he has in the bag, right? I mean, he is ridiculously good he's ridiculously good off the tee. He's ridiculously good with his long irons. He around the green, he's great. I mean, the only thing he can't do is putt. But the thing is like, if this plays super, super hard, and one thing if he doesn't have to go make a ton of birdies, like if this is like, hey, par is going to be a good score and just go birdie the par fives, like he's going to do that, you know? And so I really, really, really considered it. That said, will be my one and done play this week. And then from there, I got to figure out some way to get exposure to him. But I opted again to pass on it just because there were guys that were kind of lighting up the model that I liked the numbers a little bit better. One of those guys actually is Victor Hovland. Wes, he wasn't inside like the top five on mine, but mainly because I was doing a lot of the recency stuff. And so what I did was I backed out, put in last 50, put in last 75, put in last 100. And then he was lighting up the model. Yeah. Then he was showing up inside the top three every single time, because listen, yeah, he struggled a little bit here of late. You listen to him talk in interviews and things like that, and he says like, yeah, it didn't feel right there for a little bit, but I think I've got some stuff figured out, you know? And if Vic is okay, guys, like we're looking at this and it's 7-1 on Scotty, 9-1 on Rory. If Vic is in form, he's probably the next guy and he's probably like 12 or 13. Mm. Right. And so like, I feel like we're getting some value here on him because he's a little bit out of form, and I like to kind of catch these guys on the way back. And so I did have Victor. And again, you have to zoom out. If you zoom in, he's not going to show up. So it's kind of like you zoom out at what he possesses overall. And then that's where I landed on him. And y'all are all going to giggle, but I'm not kidding you. The other guy that did have consistent showing in a lot of my models was Sam Burns. And I have Sam Burns on the card. Sam Burns, number two overall to Scotty Scheffler in the model that I did run over at Bet the Number Golf. My Bet Spurts model had him at number six. And then the Rick Rungood model had him at number nine. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that he has just of late is really, really stroking the ball off the tee. Like if you look at his strokes gain off the tee over the last 24 rounds, he's actually second in this field.
I got him second in the last 12 too.
Yeah. And he's actually second in this field. So he's gotten much better off the tee. The thing that we hated about Burns so much was he sprayed it off the tee so much that all this stuff that he's great at just kind of fell by the wayside. And we're looking like, hey man, we don't want guys to go make bogeys last 24 rounds. He's number one in this field in bogey avoidance. If he has to scramble for missing, like we said, I didn't really emphasize, it was more of a tiebreaker, but he's number one in scrambling over the last 24 rounds in this field. Approaches from 200 plus yards, seventh overall in this field. And so I think Burns checks a lot of the boxes that we're going after for this. And so really liked him in this one. The other two guys, I'll fully admit, fellas, I hated making the clicks. I hated making the bets, but the model tells me something. And it's like guys with numbers attached to them that I don't understand why Corey Connors pops in all of these models, because everything that we've said that we like about a golfer for this course is not any is what Corey Connors brings to the table, but like he's just consistent across the whole thing, and so like it rises him up. Like he is not in the bottom at anything. He's just kind of like across the board at everything. And so you're getting Corey Connors at 60-1 out there, where literally, guys, he is sitting here at friggin' ninth in this one. He is sitting over here at like fifth.
I was gonna say, I had him up at fifth in one of mine.
Fifth in this one. Like, it's just all so again, like all the stuff that we talked about at the beginning of this podcast is what we're looking for in a golfer. Corey Connors would never come to mind. Like, he would never be the guy that comes to mind. And yet he is excelling in all these. And if you put in strokes gained on hard courses, for whatever reason, Corey Connors plays hard courses really well too. And so Corey Connors made the ticket. And then this is a lot of recency stuff here, but hey, I'm going to try to ride a heater. Matthew Pavon is a guy that was inside the top 12 in pretty much every single version of everything, definitely inside the top 20 of every version of everything. And that is zooming out and zooming in. Like, the guy has just really, really been doing a lot of stuff that we're looking for this week. And
Europeans have played very, very well here over the years too. If you look at the winners and even the guys that have finished, you know, second or somewhere in the top five, it is littered with Europeans and South Africans. So this is very much, this is not an American dominated event, shall we say. A lot of international guys win here.
Strokes gained approach last 36 rounds, he's third in this field. Strokes gained approach last 16 rounds. So if we zoom in, he's third in this field. If we talk about those approach shots from 200 plus, he's seventh in this field. It's kind of like, what the hell is going on here? And then you look par five birdie or better percentage, where we said you got to go score, he's 10th in this field. Like, I mean, there's just like all these things going for Pavon, who, by the way, is close to triple digits. He's about 90 out there right now. So again, I just couldn't argue with the model. So went there. A couple of guys that y'all talked about from a placement market standpoint. I have Adam Scott top 20.
Oh, nice. I was just going to say, it also helps if you like riding a hot putter. Matthew Pavon gaining over 3 strokes on the field with his putter over on every tournament he's played in so far this year.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, it's crazy. I didn't think he was going to be as high as he was. And of course, anytime the odds just don't match where these guys like pop up, I have to put in a ticket. I did play top 20 on Adam Scott. Same deal. Just checks a ton of the boxes here for all of that. The other guy that was interesting to me, and I don't know if y'all had any sort of temptation at all, but it's the most frustrating bet in all of golf. And I ended up just settling on a
Tom Hoagie
on a top 20. Emiliano Grillo.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Dude, so you go in, and it's like you start to look, and you're kind of like, this guy over the last like 24 rounds, right? 16th in strokes gained total in this field, 18th in tee to green, 3rd in approach, 16th in ball striking, 24th in short game. Like, all these things where he's inside the upper half of this field, yet he's triple digits to win this tournament. I didn't pull an outright ticket. I'm not going to say I might not throw in a baby little bet on him just in case something just happens to go incredibly right for him. But he's actually not sucking with the putter either. He's 27th. Yeah.
He's a guy that's made every cut. I think one year he had a DQ. I don't know if it was a scorecard, but he's made the cut every single time he's played here, essentially. So, you know, he certainly makes sense. That's one of those ones where you can get some value at a top 20. Yeah. Because if you look down the board, like what the rankings would be in terms of by the prices and the odds, he'd be in like the mid-40s in a 69-player field. But, I look at some guys that are listed above him, and he's in way better form, has played way better here than some of these guys.
And like we said, DraftKings specifically is offering top 30 and top 40 markets. It's still plus money for Grillo in top 30. It's plus 105 for top 30. And again, guys, like top 50 and ties are making the cut here. So he's probably going to have 4 chances at it to get inside that top 30. So anyway, I like that bet a lot. I don't have this in the account yet. I want to put this in just out there in the pod. I will have one more outright. It will either be Zalatoris, Fitzpatrick, or Minwoo. Those three guys are all dudes that I played Fitzpatrick last week. He was trending in the right direction. He had a 5-under round. He had a 4-under round. He had a couple of meh rounds, which didn't get him, you know, really contending. But it seems like the game is coming back around with Fitzpatrick. It seems like he's figuring some stuff out. You can still get him in the 30s. Everything that Wes said about Zalatoris, another reason why he might be the guy that ends up getting it. And as far as Minwoo goes, it's like kind of like, okay, of course, world, you need to be long. You need to be good with the long irons, whatever, stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, there's stuff to not like about Minwoo's game that maybe isn't exactly perfect for this course, but there's a lot of things that do check the boxes for him. So Minwoo might get added as well. Wes, I do want to ask you, you know, I think, guys, we should talk about some of these other guys that we didn't play just to kind of get to why maybe we didn't get to them. You know, Cantlay, Spieth, Morikawa, right. Like these guys that are all kind of there's it's still decent numbers attached to them. Wes, I got to be honest, I didn't have really any interest in any of those. The only guy that has like kind of in that odds range that did just go nuts in the model, and as you would expect, anything that might be a driver heavy course, like Ludwig was like inside the top five in every version of all that stuff.
I did consider him pretty strongly, but it's one of those things where it's like he's got the goods and we know he can play, but this is his first time seeing. Yeah. Now, this isn't his first time here at Bay Hill. He did play here last year, finished 24th. But a lot of these courses, it's his first time and it's just a step up in class and competition. Yeah. And you're getting really short prices on him, you know, so I need to see a little
right,
bit more
like 35. He's on my he's on my card, right? You know, like 35, he's on my card. But it's like, man, at 18, I just can't. Do it, you know, despite what everything says. I mean, Kelly, did any of those guys, like, did any of them, like, tempt you at all? Like, because I know there's going to be people out there going, like, hey, man, what's wrong with Tommy Fleetwood or Max Homa or Justin Thomas? And it's kind of like, you know, there's nothing wrong with any of these guys. Yeah. These are all, like, the best players in the world. It's just, I don't know if this is the absolute best fit for them.
Yeah, I think you basically just summed it up. But there were, I think Cantlay, I thought was gonna pop out more to me this week. He really did. The one guy that, so Ludwig and Morikawa are both, I just scanned everything I ran. They are top seven in everything that I ran. But, you know, I think when you look at the skill set, I mean, I've done this at least once already this year, but probably like seven times in the past year, going back to last season, of, you know, you going with Shoffley, you're going with Morikawa. You know, oftentimes they got similar skill sets. It's in this, you know, I went with Shoffley instead of Morikawa this week. I don't think that there's I wouldn't hate anybody with the idea of going with Morikawa this week. Same kind of sum up. Summary of why you would play him is why you're playing Xander. But the only drawback, like Xander, is he hasn't played here a whole ton either, right? He doesn't have some of the rounds that some of these other guys have logged here. So, everything you guys said about Ludwig was the reason I didn't go at him. And like you talked about, Matt, the odds have caught up a bit with it as well. So, the odds have caught up. Yes, he teed it up here last year, Wes, but like you're talking about, this is still one of the tougher courses you're going to play on the PGA Tour year after year. So not running to make a bet at him at current number. I think you guys are right. If that was a longer number, for sure would be interested. Just trying to think if there's anybody else. Like Hovland was, it's exactly what you said, Matt. I mean, anything short term, he's not really popping for me. You know, longer term, yes, of course, yes, he is. And I could see this course lining up perfectly for him. I think the one guy, but you know, it's because of how much we factor in approach. One of the no namers was the guy I interrupted you with was Tom Hoagie. I mean, he was probably top 11.
He's always up there on approach.
It's just the approach numbers are dominating. Which is, you know, I guess that's another, you know, kind of another tip for people that are just getting into this. If you're doing the same thing we are at home, just understanding exactly what you're reading with every one of these guys and, you know, and how they factor into it. And that is, it's his whole approach game, right, Wes? Like that is, it's the most
proximity.
Important
I think he was number one on the 200 plus that I put in this week.
Yeah. I mean, it's the most important stat basically every single week when we talk about what we're putting in our models. So we weigh it heavily. So those guys that do that best are going to, you know, rise to the top.
Guys that are playing DFS out there, you know, listen, some of the guys that are pretty cheap actually did pop pretty good in the model. I mean, you know, comparatively for how much they cost in the DFS market. Chris Kirk was certainly like around up there. He's sub 8,000 over at DraftKings. Benny Hahn, another guy that was at least popping at least somewhat decent for you. I already mentioned Pavone. I actually have him a bet in, obviously, but he was a guy that popped from a DFS standpoint. Adam Scott's only 7,500 over on DraftKings. The other guy that, again, if you pull a bottle and you're modeling, because he played so much Corn Ferry Tour, whenever you go back, you're sucking in a lot of Corn Ferry Tour. The guy that we hit on, I mean, Jake Knapp, to me, it's sucking a bunch of Corn Ferry Tour information, but listen, you still are plugging in hard courses. You're still plugging in long courses. You're still plugging in difficult scoring conditions, all stuff like that. And he's getting it done. He's 7,600 of on DraftKings.
He's going to be really interesting this week because he played very well actually last week at the Cognizant, but it's like, now you get into the step up in class. Mm-hmm. I know he did well at the Farmers, even though that wasn't a designated event, good field, but now this is a step up in class where you're playing a signature event and most of the top players and how can he do against these guys?
I did lie. Scottie Scheffler is not number one in every model I ran because the last 12-round model I ran, Jake Knapp is number one over Scottie Scheffler in that. That is three real tournaments on the PGA Tour. That is not, not going back to drawing off some of the Corn Ferry stats. So, Wes, we might be able to laugh if we think that's going to consistently pan out the rest of the year. I don't really know. Just to be straight with everybody, he was number one in the last 12-round model.
Yeah, and just to kind of dispel the thing, just because he won a couple weeks ago doesn't mean he can't win again this week. Everyone else would be I can't bet this guy because he won a couple weeks ago. It's like, no, man. Guys can win. It's just only one guy wins. That's why you don't have a lot of repeat winners over the course of a season is because only one guy wins a golf tournament. So it's it's hard, but there are guys that are consistently inside the top five. And that's not to say Jake Knapp can't be that guy. He has effortless power. He's going to be long. He's going to be good on approach. There are a lot of things in his favor that could go well on this course.
I would say that one of the things that I've kind of changed my opinion on guys like him too is that I think in years past I would have said, 29-year-old rookie, this can't be too exciting. There's no way this can be consistent of what he's going to go out there and do. Eric Cole's changed my mind on that. With what Eric Cole's come on and done since he came on the PGA Tour, basically over a year ago now, and that guy's playing every week. He's finishing top 20 every single week. I think me 3 years ago probably would have written off a guy like Jake Knapp, and Eric Cole's kind of woken me up a little bit to, hey, all right, some of these guys are, they're grinding out there for different reasons, one reason or another. Doesn't mean the game can't come together for him at some point.
Guys, if you want to check out all of our picks, you can head over to VSiN.com/picks. Anything we get added into our accounts, obviously, will end up over there on the website as well. So be sure and check that out. Kelly, Wes, myself, still going to, there are still bets to be made. The odds might change. Odds might change. Something might become more attractive. Maybe a head-to-head pops out at us or something like that. So you can head on over to VSiN.com/picks. For that as well. Of course, if you haven't already, hit the subscribe button. What are you doing? We need you to go ahead and subscribe and give us a thumbs up and all the ratings and reviews and things like that. We're doing pretty good. We're circling these tournaments. Just throw this past week out the door. To hell with that tournament. Whatever. We're talking about the rest of the tournaments. We've been circling them. So we're putting ourselves in some good positions to make some money. For Wes, for Kelly, I am Matt. Good luck on all your Arnold Palmer bets.